Part 6, The Wolf, Chapter 13. The other men rise slowly in the cold dawn. It's still more night than day, but for the last hour, Lulu has been using the red beam of his flashlight to look for signs of the prey thereafter. As a tracker, he appreciates the zigzag of the trail they followed leading to these rocks, where he hasn't been able to find a single indication of their passing. A little flame of respect has been lit inside Lulu. These women, this one man, they will be more of a challenge than Kimball led them all to believe. Herring stirs the ashes from the fire he lit the night before. "Damn, I'd sell my grandmother for a cup of hot coffee. We should have packed in some supplies." "We didn't know we'd be on a chase," Kimball says. "We were supposed to surprise them at the cabins." Herring spits on the ground.
"That's what you said about Louis Morceau."
Kimball gives Herring a killing look. "Lulu tracked him perfectly. If you hadn't screwed that up, we wouldn't need his wife."
"Not me. Was McHugh got gun happy first?"
"Clock's ticking on this," Kimball says. "We don't have time to waste. We need to catch up with them today. You better make sure that happens, Lulu."
"It's going to take some time to find their trail. From here, they could have gone anywhere."
"We'll look southeast first, the direction of the reservation town," Kimball says. "If I was running scared, that's where I'd go."
"They tried to throw us off yesterday with all that twisting and turning," Lulu says. "They may be scared, but they're not exactly running."
Herring unzips the fly on his camo pants and begins to pee against a rock.
"You got a better idea?"
"Not at the moment," Lulu confesses.
Kimball's sat phone vibrates. "Yeah," he answers, then listens. "Roger that." He turns to the other men. "They're predicting snow this afternoon." He levels a hard look at Lulu. "And word is that this man we're chasing is 100 years old. If you let a man with one foot already in the grave outrun us, Lulu, I'll shoot you myself."
"I'll get them."
It's no empty boast. Lulu knows what he's capable of. "All right, flashlights on. Let's start looking," Kimball says. Kimball and Herring move to the southeast edge of the rocky hillocks and begin looking there. Lulu has already covered that area. He begins at the western edge, where, if their prey were going to circle back toward Aurora, he might spot some sign. But he finds nothing. As the gray of dawn gives way to the stronger light of day, he works his way north and finally finds what he's been searching for. A single small boot print pressed into a thin covering of pine needles over a soft patch of earth. From the orientation of the heel and toe, the direction they've headed is obvious to him. He calls to the others who join him.
"This way,"
he says, and he nods toward the northeast.
"Circling back to the reservation," Kimball says, "just like I thought."
"Not a circle yet,"
Lulu says.
"Maybe just more misdirection. We'll know soon enough."
He starts off tracking carefully, and the others follow. In 15 minutes, they come to a ridge that runs for a couple of 100 yards. The thin, rocky soil is dominated by aspens. Lulu holds up his hand, signaling them to stop. They stand before a section of the ridge that is mostly exposed rock. Lulu points a finger toward a cleft in the stone. Herring moves to the left of the opening. Kimball takes the right and nods for Lulu to check out what's inside. Lulu flips on the high white beam of his Ling's Fire flashlight and bends into the opening. Even before he enters, he can smell the powerful odor of the sow that used the den during the long winter months. It's a good space for a black bear, he discovers, but it would have been cramped with 3 people inside. Still, he can see from the recent disturbance of the leaves and twigs littering the floor, and from a few crumbs dropped from a biscuit, that this is where their prey spent the night. He backs out.
"They were here,"
he reports.
How long ago?
Kimball asks. They had to wait until there was enough light to see by, so maybe an hour?
Which way?
Lulu scours the ground. Within minutes, he's found a sign, the snapped branch of a moose maple.
This way,
he says, and starts northeast once again. He feels at home in this arboreal landscape, but it's a sense of having been adopted by it rather than born to it. He grew up a city kid. No father he ever knew, and a mother who died when he was so young that he has no real memory of her. His memories begin with the residential school, the cold faces of the nuns, the sobs in the night from other native kids afraid or homesick or in pain. At 16, he left school and made his way to the Northwest Territories, a place as far from the grit and noise of the city as he could get. As luck would have it, a man who was half Scotch and half Denenda, a hunting guide out of Yellowknife, took him under his wing. From Bill McCrory, he learned the art of tracking. McCrory told him he was the most natural tracker he'd ever seen, that despite his upbringing among concrete towers, he understood the woods in a way few people ever did. McCrory died in a hunting accident, shot by a stockbroker from Montreal who didn't know a rifle barrel from his own dick. Lulu enlisted in the military after that, served in Afghanistan, and on discharge had gone back to Yellowknife, which is where Kimball, who'd once been his commanding officer, tracked him down and recruited him. The sat phone vibrates, and Kimball answers, listens, signs off. Frederick says we've got people following us. The cavalry to the rescue.
How many?
Herring asks. Only two. They left from the old man's cabin this morning.
We're hours ahead of them,
Lulu says.
No worries.
And he turns back to his tracking. The trail is difficult to follow, but far from impossible. Kimball and Herring are his biggest concern. Herring is impatient and impulsive, and Kimball is nervous. Kimball's responsible for this mission, and he's already made significant errors in judgment. He let Lou Morisseau slip through his fingers at the cabin north of Winnipeg. By the time he went after the man's wife, she was gone, and it had taken Kimball too long to follow her trail to Tamarack County. Kimball did the initial poking around in Aurora, but because Lulu is obviously native, Kimball sent him to do the asking on the reservation. Like most white people, Kimball assumes all natives feel a kinship with one another. But Lulu was a stranger to the people on the Iron Lake Reservation, and he knew his questions about Malu would raise suspicions. When they directed him back to O'Connor, the PI in Aurora, Kimball sent Fredericks to do the talking. Fredericks, a buffoon, if ever there was one. Still, it had been Frederick's idea to plant the tracking device on O'Connor on the off chance that he would lead them to Malu, which worked. But Kimball screwed up, maybe his biggest screw-up yet, because he failed to understand the situation on Crow Point. It's obvious to Lulu that this Malu is a good deal more than just an old medicine man. Lulu didn't need the weather report Kimball received over the sat phone to know that snow is coming. He sensed it in the dark hours of the morning when he took the last watch, felt the front moving in, could smell the moisture carried in the clouds it was bringing. While he'd searched for signs before dawn, he was thinking about the difficulty the snow would create if they didn't find their prey quickly. He's begun to suspect this might be a greater challenge than he'd anticipated. Even on rock, the unwary can leave their mark. A turned stone, the scuff of a heel across a strip of lichen, blood where a fall has caused a scraped hand or knee or ankle. Yet Lulu, in the dark of that morning, could find nothing. Which might have been pure luck on the part of his prey, but he's begun to suspect otherwise. The zigzag of the trail the night before, which at first had seemed to indicate that these people might be lost and wandering, led eventually to those difficult rocky acres. And the trail this morning led to good shelter for the night.
Lulu has come to understand that there is nothing haphazard in the movements of those he's tracking. He understands, too, that he and Kimball and Herring have entered ground eminently familiar to their prey. Despite their firepower, their sat phones, their ruthlessness, they are the ones at a disadvantage now, and the coming snow will only make matters worse. After several hours of enduring Herring's snipes about their too slow progress and Kimball's constant reminders that snow is imminent, Lulu leads them to a bog pond where he pauses. Heading east is a clear set of the small boot prints he's certain belong to a woman. While Lulu considers this, Herring blurts out, "Jesus Christ, a blind man can see where they've gone," Kimball says with irritation. "He's right, Lulu. What's the holdup now?" Lulu turns to the west and begins to walk in that direction. "Where the hell are you going?" Herring says. Lulu ignores them and walks 50 yards before he sees the first sign, a broken stem of bog laurel. The break is recent. He walks back to where the others are waiting and tells them what he's found.
"Well, hell's bells," Herring says. "They've split up."
"And the smart ones went east, back toward the reservation, like I said." Kimball grins in a gloating way.
"Maybe," Lulu says. "But maybe that trail's clear because they want us to go east."
"All right," Kimball says, using the voice he hauls up when it's time to play commander. "We split up too. Herring and me'll go east, you go west. 10 minutes just to see where each trail leads, then we rendezvous back here."
"Be careful," Lulu says.
"Why?"
Herring says.
"The old man is smart."
"The old man is already next door to dead," Herring throws back. "I'm going to make sure he finishes the trip."
"Go," Kimball says, and gives Herring a push. Lulu turns his back to them and retraces his path to the broken twig. He finds the next sign 20 yards farther along, where the soft moss that carpets the edge of the marsh has been pressed down by moccasins. He speculates that they've divided into two groups, skirting the lake on either side, maybe in an attempt to confuse their trackers. He believes that the trail he's following will join eventually with the one Kimball and Herring have followed, and they'll find that their prey have continued north deeper into the wilderness. He's a quarter of the way around the bog pond when he hears Herring scream.